We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 97. This is going to be the second to last episode before Yankees baseball is officially over. Scott, last week you did not write them off for the playoffs this season. Are you ready to do that yet?
Yeah, I would be completely ignorant if I didn't write them off at this point. It's done. I mean, it's done. When you have an elimination number that's under three, even under five, you're screwed. With that many teams in front of you, there's zero chance. So yeah, I've come to accept it.
This is one of the more lame weeks of baseball I can remember. What, they are 33 innings without scoring a run? If that had happened in the middle of the season, I think it would have been hysteria in Yankees land. But the fact that the writing was kind of on the wall, I think even though you did not write them off after last weekend in Fenway, that was the official nail in the coffin for their season. So I think a lot of people may have checked out mentally this past week. But, I mean, you go 3.5 games without scoring a run. That is brutal.
Yeah, and, you know, when we recorded, it was Sunday from what I remember. So they hadn't actually gotten swept in Boston yet. And that, just the fact that the sweep hadn't set into my brain yet, that was a tough pill to swallow. That was a pretty bad series. Talk about laying an egg at a crucial time. It's just the team had zero left. I mean, it was Thursday, I think, just ended the season. Thursday of the first game of the Red Sox series.
Yeah, the backbreaking loss. I mean, it's completely understandable looking back on it why the team folded like they did in Fenway, but they win that first game of the series. You're possibly looking at a 3 out of 4 series win for the Yankees, and instead it was a sweep.
Yeah, that game would have been a totally... The end of the season could have been very different if that game was closed out the way it should have been. So
I think
one will never know.
I think a lot of people listening to us right now are like, please, God, shut the hell up about that Fenway, about that Red Sox series at this point. Don't want to relive bad memories. So we will move on from that. We got plenty to talk about. First, I want to say nice job with the Rob Refsnyder podcast. If you guys have not listened to it, go check it out. It is episode 96. It was released on Friday of last week. Scott was able to get a 45-minute interview conversation. It was a pretty laid-back conversation. Refsnyder seems like a pretty chill dude. I guess he's got that Cali blood in him. But he seemed like a nice dude.
Yeah, honestly, overall, he was extremely nice and super easy to talk to. I mean, you can definitely tell he's a laid-back guy, which also... You start thinking about what was going on last year and some of the rumors about him being some kind of an attitude. Like, there's just zero possibility of this actually being true. There's just no chance. This guy is not. There's no possible way this guy was ever a problem with anybody. He's extremely nice, and you can tell it's genuine, just a nice dude. So I don't see any of that. I don't know what it is. Maybe being laid back too much could be perceived as something else. I don't know. But
well, wasn't the knock on him that he was maybe a little too cocky? But like,
yeah,
you said,
I mean, see that at all.
You couldn't even get out of him like that. He was good at baseball, essentially. From the sound of it, he made it seem like he was just lucky to be in the major league. So he did not seem cocky at all.
Exactly, and you could just tell by, because we talked a lot about the way he was raised and his parents and all this, and a lot of it was, hey, his dad saying, you're not the biggest dude, you're not the most talented guy, but if you work the hardest, you can do anything. And like that mentality, that is not the mentality of somebody who's cocky. It's just, it's not at all. It's the opposite of. So yeah, I think that was all just media trying to make something out of nothing. And, you know, the fact is the guy, you know, obviously had a pretty, you know, a great career leading up to the Yankees. And if you think about the past and all the position players and how long it takes to get to the Yankees, he actually came up pretty quick. I mean, I think all of these guys, minus Gary Sanchez, who's been in the system for like 20 years, but everybody seems like they've been almost on the fast path, especially for New York Yankees minor league guys, position guys. And it's impressive to see them all come up. But, you know, there was a lot of really cool information, stuff that I didn't know. And then we did a lot just about him, and then, you know, the dynamic in the clubhouse and Scranton and all that stuff. So definitely check it out. There's the video. We did a Skype video too. So released the audio version on Friday, and then to Tuesday, we're recording on Monday. Tuesday is when the video version will come out, and it's just the two of us hanging out on Skype. So
yeah,
check it out.
I liked when he was talking about who thinks they're the funniest in the clubhouse, and he basically said Greg Bird is the corniest dude out there.
Yeah, but his immediate reaction was Aaron Judge. It was a very quick reaction of Aaron Judge. And then I think he started thinking about it. He's like, wait, hold on. Bird's jokes are ridiculous. It's Bird, absolutely.
Yeah, cornbread to the max.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that.
And also about the part where he was basically an outfielder in college and he gets the call from Yankees scouts and he's got drafted by the Yankees. He's probably ecstatic that he's going to be drafted by a major league team, not just any major league team, but the Yankees. And then they drop the bomb. Oh, yeah, we're drafting you as a second baseman. I'd be like, wait, what? I've never done that before. I would have shit my pants if I were him.
Well, I think if you listen to that conversation too, because we definitely talked a lot more about the positions. I definitely tried to ask and poke in there as much as I could because I was curious. I wanted to see how he felt about moving all around to these different positions. And you could tell that he was not comfortable going to the infield, period. I mean, this guy's an outfielder. He didn't play anywhere else in high school, in college, you know, a couple games here and there for you know, emergency reasons, but he's an outfielder and that's where he's comfortable. So the fact that they brought him in as an infielder is very interesting. And to see, you know, how that transition is, how it's happened, and the fact that he's never done it, you could tell he was apprehensive a bit, but then started to come around on the idea of it. So,
well, it would be one thing if he did it in college where he was probably in the top 10% of athletes in college baseball. But once you get to professional baseball, everyone is as good as you.
Right.
So you're no longer can just out athletic, if that's even a term. Your athleticism can no longer just be the only driving factor to your success. You actually have to have played there and have experience to know the ins and outs of it when the game is moving so fast at the pro level. So I mean, it's totally understandable why he has struggled defensively in the infield, if that's what you want to call it. I mean,
I don't even think it is that.
He's not a gold glove second baseman, but
he fields the position no problem.
He's adequate. And for somebody who's only been doing it for a short time, it's pretty amazing. But great interview. Definitely go listen to it. Check out the Skype video. You said that is coming out today, right? As people are listening to this Tuesday.
Yeah, it'll be probably early afternoon, late morning type thing after the podcast.
And speaking of Tuesday, the podcast is going to be moving to Tuesday. Partial reason why we're doing it this week on Tuesday is because I was in Chicago this weekend and unable to record on Sunday night, which is when we normally do it. So it is Monday night as we're recording this right now. But we just figured it made sense as we're moving into the off season. Next Sunday is the last game of the season. So that'll give us a day to sort of comprehend everything that went on this Yankee season. It has been a wild up and down season, but we'll have a nice wrap-up episode for you guys next week. But Tuesdays from here on out for the rest of the off season and into spring training of next year when we probably will shift back to Mondays.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you know, you mentioned the fact that it's an exhausting season. It has been. I mean, I'm literally exhausted. I feel like mentally, I am mentally drained from this Yankee season just because of there's just been so much going on with the amount of change and up and down play. And it was a lot to throw into one season. I mean, could you imagine if we were into the playoffs too and then had that on top of it? It's a lot of stuff going on one year.
You just keep going at that point.
I'm just saying that if you were to add that on, I mean, this would have gone down as probably one of the more chaotic and hectic seasons. I mean, yes. even just the regular season is probably one of the more chaotic and hectic seasons.
Yes, the two of us who host a podcast need an off season from baseball.
Seriously, it's true. I mean, there comes a point where an off season is very welcomed, and you're like, okay, I could take a little break, and then the fever comes back. You know, probably around, you know, November, December for me.
Well, I'm honestly, the baseball playoffs are my favorite out of all the playoffs, so I'm gonna enjoy baseball throughout the month of October, even though the Yankees aren't in it. And we'll still talk a lot of baseball throughout the playoffs.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely, yeah.
So going forward, I mean, at least for the rest of the baseball season, we'll still talk about Yankees if any news breaks, any transactions happen, anything like that. But obviously, we're going to be talking playoff baseball because it should be a pretty exciting year. I mean, so many things could happen. And I'm kind of getting petrified of the baseball playoffs right now because it made me think about when I was in Chicago. This, I guess we can just transition into this. I went to a Cubs game, Cubs versus Cardinals, went to Wrigley Field for the first time. And the Cubs have been the best team all season. And I'm just starting to get really terrified that it's going to be Red Sox Cubs World Series, and the Red Sox are so damn hot right now. And it would basically be Theo's current team going up against his old team, because he drafted Bogarts and Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. and all of those guys who are killing it for the Red Sox right now. And I just have a terrible feeling in my gut that it's going to be one of those weird playoff runs for the Red Sox. Ortiz's last year, and it's just, I can already, it's giving me like shivers up my spine in a bad way right now. What I can kind of see is going to be happening in October, and I really hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, because unfortunately, when you look at up and down the teams that are going to be making it, I mean, granted, there's still some up in the air, but the ones in the American League, they are by far the hottest team going into the playoffs right now, by far, in the American League. And you're right, when you if they could get to the World Series, that's scary stuff. I mean, I know the baseball world in general would probably be happy because the ratings would be through the roof, but please God, don't make it like that. I really, really do not want to see this happen. I do want to see the Cubs win the World Series, though. I think that would be cool.
I mean, obviously, I really don't care who wins as long as it's not the Red Sox.
Yeah, I agree. I would take any other AL East team except for them as well.
Yeah,
by a lot.
And we talked about that last year when the Blue Jays were going through the playoffs. Obviously, we weren't rooting for the Blue Jays, but at the same time, if they had won, we would have been over it very quickly.
Yeah, and especially this year, I feel like I would be over it a lot faster this year than I would have been last year. They don't annoy me as much this year as they did last year.
But you mentioned the Red Sox are the hottest team by far in the AL right now, and it's almost better to be hot at the right time than good all season.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. That's why I was talking about last week. That's why I think that Seattle might have peaked a little too early, and that's why the Yankees, when they went on that eight-game winning streak, while it was needed at the time, it was too early to sustain something like that. So, unfortunately, they were just in a position where they needed it at that time as well. But, yeah, you're right. If you get hot, if you're in a position where you're comfortable, you can make the playoffs, and you get hot as well, big time, that's huge. I mean, momentum is everything in baseball.
And the Indians have been kind of the forgotten good team in the AL all season. They've sort of flown under the radar, but they're fading quickly. They no longer have the best record in the American League. I think the Red Sox and Rangers are tied for best record in the AL. And, I mean, if the Red Sox have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, I mean, they mash at Fenway Park.
I know. They're scary at Fenway.
Like, look what they did to the Yankees at Fenway Park. They were down in three of those games. They should have lost three of those games and pulled them out of their ass to come back and win. It's a scary proposition if the Red Sox are at home for the month of October.
Yep, I totally agree with that. Whoever the other teams are, they definitely need to steal that home field, and they know it. Especially Francona. You don't think the Indians are thinking about that with Francona knowing the way that the Red Sox play in Fenway Park? I mean, of anybody, he knows it, so he knows damn well how important that is.
So my trip to Wrigley. You've never been to Wrigley, right?
No, yeah, I'm jealous. I didn't actually know you were going to a Cubs game, so I'm pretty jealous about this. They weren't in town. I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and they were not in town, so I was not able to go.
I mean, Wrigley's been on my baseball bucket list ever since I can remember. And yeah, we went to the Saturday game, Cubs-Cardinals game, so obviously a huge rivalry, kind of like the National League version of the Red Sox-Yankees. Wrigley's an awesome place, though. I was jealous the whole time because I remember the feeling of the old Yankee Stadium and the atmosphere in that stadium, and it's just not there in the new stadium. And you and I have talked about this 1,000 times at this point. But you go into Wrigley Field, and it just feels different than walking into a different baseball park. It might sound corny. I can't describe it any better than that, but I walked in, and I felt like it was different and better than other ballparks just from the history and the age of it.
No, I get it. I think that makes complete sense because I feel like when it's almost like the park has to be broken in and have that history so that you have, I mean, you can look in certain areas and you know where certain things happened. I mean, you know, you look in the left field stands and you know exactly where Alou was about to catch the ball. And I can't think of his name right now for some reason, Bartman, where Bartman was about to, you know, he ruined the Cubs forever. And you just, I don't know. You remember things about that, the Ivy, it's just, it has that history behind it. And you're right, because I get that. I hate to admit this, but I get that same exact feeling. I've never had this feeling walking to Wrigley because I've never been there, but I've been to Fenway and I was jealous of Fenway at the time because it was after the old Yankee Stadium closed. And when I go into that place, I'm like, damn, like this place is pretty cool. And the fact that you're so like the older stadiums, you're closer to the ball, the field. I assume it's like that in Wrigley.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's not so spread out. It's more vertical than it is, you know, away from the field.
I was upper deck down the left field. We were in the last section in the upper deck down the left field line. And because we just bought the cheapest tickets we could find.
Yeah.
They were still expensive. But that's closer than anything in the upper deck at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the old Yankee Stadium, when you're in the 400 levels, I mean, it was straight down. I mean, like, don't trip because you're going down hard.
Oh, yeah. And, you're right on top of the field.
Yeah. That's all the new stadiums. I mean, I think it started with Camden Yards as, like, the blueprint of how these stadiums are laid out. But they're definitely more spread out. They go further away as you go up. Whereas the old stadiums are more, you know, on top of the field. And Fenway is, I mean, that place, I mean, it's not a big ballpark. We all know that. And the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter where you're sitting, you're right on the field. I mean, there's not really a bad seat in that place. And it's pretty awesome. And yeah, I'm jealous. And you know what? We shitted on the new stadium for the fact that it doesn't feel like the old stadium. And that's probably going to be the case no matter what, right? I mean, it's gonna need to get cured. It's gonna need to get worked in and to get some playoff games and some success to happen, and for us to have some really, really good times there and some great memories at this place that are just and multiple of these for it to get that feeling back. So you know, it'll happen eventually.
Part of it is the fact that the Cubs are the most popular team in baseball right now. Everyone feels the energy around that team that they are trying to break a 108-year-old curse. And you could feel that in the ballpark. I mean, it was sold out on a game in which actually does not matter for the Cubs.
Right.
I know they hate the Cardinals, so that's a rivalry game, but the Cubs have already clinched everything they can possibly clinch in the National League. And they're still going balls to the walls at that stadium. It was sold out. It's a noontime game. The game started at noon, which threw me off guard. That extra hour makes all the difference, so you can get there a little bit early, have a few beers before the game. But we had to rush there to get there by noon. And the thing was sold, and it was packed for first pitch. And Wrigleyville is an awesome place. I mean, so many bars around the stadium. And, I mean, I hate to say this because, obviously, we know what the Bronx is, but you don't really... The Bronx is not a nice area. And there's a couple bars around Yankee Stadium that you go to, and we have fun. Billy's, Stan's, the Dugout, whatever it may be. But you can walk around Wrigleyville, and it's a neighborhood. I mean, it feels nicer.
Yeah, it feels different. It's different.
And there was a girl outside walking around with a goat, which I thought was funny.
Well, the other thing about the fans being so pumped up, first of all, they're pumped up because they have the best team in baseball, so they're going to go and watch them no matter what. And two, you know, having the fans there for a game like that is that, you know, they have an opportunity to knock the Cardinals out of the playoffs, in essence.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, by knocking them out of the wild card, by beating them each time, is that's a big deal for the fans too. So, I mean, they may have already clinched at that point, but I mean, the juice is still there because you want to get rid of the Cardinals.
You know what I did notice is a huge difference though? There was plenty of Cardinals fans there, and there was no animosity between any of them in the stands. Yeah. It was friendly, ho-hum atmosphere.
Nice.
That does not happen when the rivalry is going well, Yankees-Red Sox.
No, there's an East Coast edge. That's that edge of the East Coast, that little bit of pissed offness everybody has in their breath, and that's fine.
Yeah.
It's something that's totally different than when you go to Chicago or anywhere in the Midwest. That doesn't exist. Everybody's very nice.
Yeah, I was sitting next to some Cardinals fans, and I sat down, and the guy immediately started talking to me, assuming I guess that I was a Cubs fan, even though I was wearing just regular clothes, and he could not have been nicer. And it's just funny because that does not happen on the East Coast, which I would not change for a thing.
I like it a lot, actually.
I got a Chicago style hot dog, which was good. Extremely messy. Throw all the relish and the pickles on there. Figured if I'm in Wrigley, gotta do it up as best I can, Chicago style. All in all, great atmosphere. I mean, it's one of those places that you got to go to.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the Chicago hot dog?
I am. Yeah.
I'm a fan. Absolutely. I had one when I was there, and we used to have them. Actually, there was a little hot dog place down when I would go to Vero Beach and go to Dodger spring training with my family when I was a kid. And there was a place that had the Chicago style hot dogs. I didn't actually know I was eating a Chicago style hot dog until first time I went to Chicago.
I mean, normally I'll choose like a sausage and peppers over a hot dog, but
yeah,
it was definitely a good hot dog. I was wearing mustard after the thing.
Yeah, that's okay. It's better messy.
Last thing I'll say about Chicago baseball. We went into a few stores downtown, just whatever. It might have had some sporting goods stuff. Plenty of Bulls gear, plenty of Bears gear, Blackhawks, all the Cubs gear you could imagine. Not a single shred of White Sox gear. It's like that team does not even exist in Chicago.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I have when I've been there, it's all Cubs stuff. It's everywhere. I don't know how long the White Sox have to be good in order for them to get some. See, the problem is that if you think about 15 years ago, though, I mean, the Cubs, you talk about the energy walking into Wrigley. You walk in like before Sosa got there, and before that, before the home runs started going out of that place. I mean, it was just an old ballpark at that point, right? It probably just felt old and dreary because the Cubs were horrible for a long time. And at that point, when you have an old ballpark, it starts feeling old, right? It starts feeling older. Whereas now you have like, oh, this brand new old ballpark with this new team that's dominant, and there's a new buzz in the air, and it's charming. Whereas before, it was just dreary. So I feel like the White Sox are the kind of like the dreary team right now in Chicago.
Oh yeah, I have a buddy who lives in Chicago, and he's a White Sox fan, and he speaks of them as if they're dead. And it's like such a sadness in his voice about how the team is completely going in the wrong direction. He was like, oh, I'm jealous of the Yankees, the fact that they have now a new direction so quickly. And
right.
We are completely spoiled when the fact that they, at the beginning of the season, were trying to compete with veterans that, you know, A-Rod, Teixeira, the whole list goes on, and immediately at the trade deadline, they were over.
I can't put this in the category of spoiled in that sense, though. I mean, I feel like we're just extremely fortunate because Cashman. I mean, no. If you think about what happened beforehand, before the season, and we looked at the potential of what actually occurred, and the fact that all these kids came up and everything, like this would have been not even in our wildest dreams to be a possibility, and the fact that Cashman made it actually happen on pure like. Hustle and hard work and like cleverness, to me, it just makes us fortunate and not spoiled in that sense. If we had went out and bought a bunch of people, okay, I could go for that. But that's just good GMing. that's some damn good GMing right there.
I mean, it's a little bit of right place, right time.
He sold high on
Andrew Miller, sold high on Chapman, sold unbelievably high on Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, I mean, better be lucky than good. That's what everybody always says. And the Yankees aren't usually in that position. They're usually just good. And now they got lucky because they weren't good. So it's kind of ironic, actually, how this quick turnaround happened. And we say quick. I mean, we could have two more years.
It's not a turnaround yet. But,
there are bricks. There are bricks laid, yeah.
99% of it, though, is the fact that Gary Sanchez appears to be a superstar.
Right.
And say he was just an average player. Right now he's batting .280 with 5 home runs and 20 RBIs, and he was playing solid defense behind the plate. I don't think we'd be feeling as optimistic as we are right now.
Probably not. I mean, just the fact that there's an influx of kids that are about to come up in the next year or two is what's, to me, so exciting. So, yeah, and then the fact we have a freaking superstar.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that we have potentially on our hands a player of the caliber of a Bryce Harper or a Mike Trout, where he could be that type of player for the Yankees, a franchise-altering player.
Oh, way better start than those clowns. Way better start.
Well, no one's had a better start than
I know.
Mike Trout, but...
up until Gary Sanchez.
But don't you remember like the narrative this year and after Derek Jeter retired is, well, who are the Yankees going to market now? Who is their face?
There was no exciting. Before the season started, you and I were talking. Who's the guy?
Yeah. Well, who's the guy right now? Gary Sanchez is now the face of the Yankees, and it took a month.
Yeah, you're right.
It's insane. You're right. It's insane. And next year, going into the year, going into 2017, he's going to be the Yankees' most popular player.
You're right. There's no doubt.
Not only because of the stats, but I mean the history he's making and everything. And I know everyone's discussing like, should he be Rookie of the Year? I think it's a kind of I don't want to say dumb discussion because I think he has earned to be in that conversation, but people are like legit getting upset that he might not win the Rookie of the Year. It's kind of stupid. I mean, it's an award that really does not mean anything.
Yeah, but I know, but the fact that I think people are getting upset is because people are dismissing Gary Sanchez as a guy that should be up for it because of the time served in the major leagues. And that to me is also ridiculous. You need to look at the body, the entire body, and this guy got to where nobody else got to for, you know, half, not even half of a season. And he's very much in the discussion. There's absolutely no doubt.
Totally. And he's had a season as catcher, 19 home runs, 38 RBIs, OPS over 1,000, and a 3 WAR. He's produced 3 wins for the Yankees in 47 games, which is unheard of. I mean, players, that's like an 11.5 WAR season, which is essentially what like Mickey Mantle did in his prime, what Barry Bonds did when he was doing all of the steroids on the West Coast and hitting 75 home runs. I mean, that just does not happen to produce wins at that rate. So I understand why he's in the conversation, but he has only played 47 games.
Right.
But I mean, the stats are there, and I would totally understand though if the voters go for Michael Fulmer. I mean, he's leading the league in ERA and he's been there all season.
Yeah, no, I get it too. He's got a much bigger body of work, and I mean, that's, you want to look at when they're actually going X's to O's of all these guys, and they're seeing the stats, and the stats are obviously ridiculous for Gary Sanchez. But the fact of the matter is, when they say 47 games, that's going to mean a lot. And granted, Michael Fulmer is a pitcher, and he's had 25 starts, so I don't know. There could be a lot of back and forth on this, but
that's
he's
kind
been
of,
there all year, but he has 25 starts, so it's kind of strange the fact that he's a starting pitcher.
Don't you? And I have no actual proof of this, but don't you feel like the rookie of the year usually goes to a position player?
Yes, I don't remember any. I don't remember the pitch. I don't remember like you said, the proof. I'm not looking at a list. I'm just going off my memory. But yes, it seems like a position player.
This is me talking out of my ass, but
yeah. I'll also talk out of my ass and agree with you.
But say Gary Sanchez had 90 games right now, and he was, 90 games, 25 or 30 home runs, which would not be at the same rate he is now. But I think he would definitely get it if it was just more games and the same stats, which I guess proves that he should be it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I could absolutely argue that he should be the rookie of the year. There's no doubt.
I mean, I was going to make the argument if the Yankees made the playoffs that he should be MVP. And I was not going to do it ironically. I was going to make a serious case for that.
And the funny thing is that he did everything he possibly could have.
Oh, I mean, the dude was a one-man team.
But he couldn't have done anything more at all. So the fact that they didn't make the playoffs, if they had made the playoffs, that means everybody else is doing other things.
But the reason why he can be a superstar is because he's a catcher. There's no possible way for him to keep up the pace in which he's hitting home runs. I mean, it's just, he's not going to hit 65 home runs next year.
It's interesting. And I'm going to go off the cuff here. I actually meant to put this in our show notes before. We always have show notes that we kind of use, but I'm going to go off the cuff because there's something I wanted to talk about. And it's basically about what you were just saying. I was listening to Francesa this week, and he was talking about, it was a caller calling in about Gary Sanchez and long-term possibilities and what's going to happen. And Francesa went very specific and very all in on this, and the fact that the Yankees need to find another DH and another catcher so that Gary Sanchez can be a catcher / DH for his entire career and starting next year. He doesn't think, Francesa went all in saying he should not be a full-time catcher because how special his bat is. And because if he is a full-time catcher starting now and, for the next 5 years or whatever, it's going to take off life from his bat at the end of the years, at the end of his career. And it was a real, when he was saying that, it was a very interesting just, line in the sand, because he was like all in on this. Like, this is exactly what they should do, and there's no other reason. There's nothing else you should do but this. And
it happened with Posada, where come September he looked like he was fried.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but the fact is that Gary Sanchez he's shown that the fact that he could be a special batter, and there's no doubt if he's catching an entire year, it's going to take away from that, and the Yankees would be worse off offensively if that were the case. Now, someone arguing against that is that, hey, this guy is almost as good defensively as he is offensively.
He's been an elite catcher.
That's where I guess the problem lies, in the sense that you're too good at one thing, your body's eventually not going to cooperate with you and something's going to go. And do the Yankees try to nip that in the butt? I mean, that's when you and I were talking earlier. earlier in the year about Brian McCann and how he can actually be a valuable asset on this team next year. And after hearing what Francesco was saying and just thinking about it a little bit more, now I'm even more on board with McCann coming back.
The sports pope and being the sports pope got you.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was pretty much on board with it before that. It was a hot take. I was on board with it beforehand, but I mean, I'm even more on board because now you can actually have, I mean, you could bring back Romine as well. Romine could be the backup catcher, and then you just platoon McCann, McCann's your DH, quote unquote, and then so you give Sanchez days off
with
that flexibility. Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to give him time off. Or half a game off, basically, with just being the DH, and you're keeping his bat in there. So,
but what if his bat is only 75% of what we've seen, which is still great? It's still one of the better bats in the league. But say he's for the season 25 to 30 home runs and a .280 hitter, which is very, very good. Then he's not as valuable if he's a DH. He's valuable right. In that sense because he is an elite defensive catcher as well.
Right.
And
no,
I think that's it. If he were playing first base right now with the same stats, he would not be getting Rookie of the Year considerations. People would be amazed by how fast he was hitting home runs, but it's extra special because he's a catcher, and that's very, very rare.
Well, I mean, I get that, but it's also the pace. So he could have been playing any position because of the pace that he did this is ridiculous.
But he's also throwing runners out at a great pace, and he at a great rate, and he's working well at the pitchers. I mean, he's helping the team win. Catcher is one of those positions where you can go 0-for-4 and you can still help the team win.
Right.
So I just think that I understand Francesa's point, and I think it's definitely got a lot of merit if he's going to be a 50 home run a year guy. But I think if he's a 30 home run a year guy, then...
I mean, I'm not talking even 50 home runs. If you're saying 35 to 40 home runs, that's... I mean, what catcher is hitting 35 to 40 home runs?
Mike Piazza. Oh, wait, no, he's not in the league anymore, is he?
No, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Hmm. Future spot for El Gary, maybe.
But I'm saying, like, I don't know how you get to the point of saying, well, maybe he is a 35 home run guy, and that's why we have to keep him a catcher unless you do it. So there's going to have to be a decision made at some point, and I think the decision should weigh on the side of, hey, let's get a DH first, see how this rolls, and then if we need to just keep him a catcher, then we can do that.
Yes. Yeah, no, I understand.
Because then you're not wearing the guy out while you're making the decision.
And this is like you said, I think they can have a short-term fix for it with McCann next season.
Yeah.
None of us expected Sanchez to do this, so I think when the Yankees were trying to dump Brian McCann, they didn't nearly expect Gary Sanchez to be an MVP-level player. So,
right.
And I honestly don't think the Yankees are going to be dumping McCann. I just don't see... I know we've talked this to death, but...
Oh, we have an entire winter to talk about this to death even more. This is going to be a dead horse.
But I just feel like there's been nothing new. There's been no new developments in this Brian McCann thing, but every week some new baseball reporter is tweeting that, oh, the Yankees are serious about dumping Brian McCann in the offseason. Like, yeah,
no,
we've known this for a month.
The only new news is that he's becoming more valuable as this season is going on, in my opinion, because of the flexibility and just... you know, the leadership and the way that the kids are coming up. To me, he's more valuable now than he ever has been.
Yeah. And right now, Gary Sanchez is doing it with nobody around him in the lineup. Castro is playing phenomenally before he got injured, but he's been injured for a week at this point. So he's basically the only bat in the Yankees lineup, and he's still producing. You're going to add in Greg Bird next year. You're going to add in, hopefully, a healthy Aaron Judge. You're going to have Castro and Didi who are back in there playing well. So the lineup is not going to just be Gary Sanchez. He'll be batting third on opening day next season, but he might have Greg Bird hitting behind him or Starlin Castro or somebody who is also a very good hitter.
Yeah, and he's going to have people in front of him too. I feel like Didi's going to be in that spot in front of him.
He's got to, right? So I mean, Didi.
That's my gut. Yeah.
I'm just so tired of seeing Jacoby Ellsbury and Brett Gardner at the top of the order.
Brett Gardner's not going to be on this team. There's too many outfielders in our system that are exactly the same player.
Well, you're going to have to basically, you're selling for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and they will.
It sucks because I think they could have actually gotten a valuable piece. Remember the Cleveland Indians were talking about trading possibly Danny Salazar for Brett Gardner?
Was that one of the 11-year-old reporters that came out and be like, hey, I know a guy that...
But the fact that no one was saying that's the dumbest trade in history, now that would be the dumbest trade in history.
Yeah, it would be up there for sure. It's like a... It's like the trade the Mets got for Kazmir. Remember that trade? What was it? Victor Zambrano.
Yes, because apparently Al Leiter hated Scott Kazmir. That was the.
Oh, was that it? I didn't think
you don't remember that.
Uh-uh.
Michael Kay has teased him about this on the broadcast in the past, and he, I think this has been refuted. But the main juxta of the rumor was that when Kazmir came up as a Met, he was playing rap music, specifically Eminem, in the clubhouse, and Al Leiter hated it and asked the Mets to trade him.
That's awesome.
Which is just asinine.
Okay, so now one of our new goals for the offseason is we need to get Al Leiter on the show so that we can talk about this.
we've got to solve this. What is it? 18-year-old rumor at this point? Like,
yeah.
Was Scott? I mean, Scott Kazmir has been in the league forever, and he's still only 33. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
He came up, I think, like 19 or 20 years old. That's like when I forget why I was looking at Felix Hernandez, like baseball reference page, like a week ago, and I was like, wait, he started in 2005? Like, what? It hurt my brain to think about.
There's a few guys like that. I mean, Molina's been in the league, it seems like, forever, too.
Yeah, Cano. Cano was 05.
Yeah, Cano feels it, though, old bastard.
So, as we were saying at the beginning of the show, horrible week for the Yankees. They went 33 innings without scoring a run. I mean, they were putting out AAA lineups. Not even AAA lineups, because the Yankees' AAA system won the damn championship this year. Have we had a podcast before?
No, we have not had that.
Let's talk about that now. Congratulations to the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. You have won the International League Championship.
You know, it's what's more impressive about that, and Refstein and I were talking about this, and the fact that there was so much turnover on that team,
yeah,
and they still were able to win.
Dude,
that.
They did that without Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, like, they did it without that. Everybody who was producing at a high level. They're all in the Yankees. It's crazy how much. Well, you know, all the trade guys came over.
They traded away the guy who won the MVP of the league before the championship.
Right. Yeah, it was all new personnel. It was crazy. And Refsnyder could not say enough good things about the coaching staff at Scranton. Like, they were like some of the best out there. And the fact that there, you know, there's jobs in the major leagues like around the corner for these dudes. So, yeah, good job by them. And that's an impressive win. It really is. It's really an impressive win. And you know what? It's a lot of these pitchers who are we've called them, people have
4A
called them
pitchers.
4A pitchers, and these guys that are dominating, that throw 90 miles an hour on a good day. But they can hit spots, and that's what got them there. I mean,
yeah,
it was
Montgomery. Jordan Montgomery had like a crazy playoffs.
Yeah,
and
the starting pitcher, I can't think of his name. He's got it's a unique name. I can't think of his name, but
he's
the one who, you know, he throws 89, 90 miles an hour, but he paints.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting to see how they won it with all the new guys. So, you know, good job by the Rail Riders. Good job, Scranton.
You know what I was thinking, like. I saw them try, like, kind of running in for the celebration in the middle of the diamond, and they were obviously happy. But what kind of celebration do you think it is when you win a AAA championship?
I mean, you got to be pumped up. That's your championship at that level, right? It's the highest championship that you could possibly get next to a World Series. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I would argue that I would rather say
the
win
college World Series
or something, because you're younger, I feel like once you get to AAA, your main focus is like, how the hell do I get to the big leagues?
The College World Series is probably more exciting for them, but the AAA World Series is the highest level of baseball that you could play besides the World Series. So it's impressive.
You're absolutely right, unless you want to go to Japan or something.
Well, that would be disputed. That would be disputed, because some would say AAA players, you know, a AAA team, a good AAA team, could take on a Japanese team. So
you think they went balls out for the celebration afterwards, or do you think it was kind of mild?
No, dude, I think they went nuts. I've seen the AAA hockey players and the way that they I've seen them after
hockey players, hockey guys.
I'm just saying, I've seen AAA hockey. When I was in college, the Norfolk Admirals won, and those guys were, I mean, they would always be out of the bars, always, and those guys got loose.
Speaking of guys at bars, random baseball players, do you remember Dimitri Young?
Yes.
Dimitri Hook.
Yes. He had a brother, Delman Young,
yeah, who murdered the Yankees. But Dimitri Young played in the major leagues for the Tigers, and he was on a rehab assignment for the Nationals, who had a single-A affiliate in Burlington, Vermont, which is where I went to college, called the Lake Champlain Monsters. I can't even remember the actual name of the team. But he was at the bars one night in Burlington, and everyone was buying him drinks. And I'm sitting there like, why the hell are you buying Dimitri Young drinks? Not only has this guy made like $15 million in his career, but it's just like, it's not even a cool player anymore. It's like, who cares about Dimitri Young and buying him a drink? But yeah, so he was living it up in single A.
That's a thing. Whenever people see major players, yeah, they buy them things. These guys don't pay for a damn thing when they're out. It's they don't pay for anything. They there's one dude I'll never forget I used to work at a sports bar when I was in college, and Aaron Brooks. You remember Aaron Brooks? He was the quarterback for the Saints.
Yeah, vaguely.
He came in. He was from the area. Came in and ordered just like ridiculous amount of like unbelievable. He was in with his like crew. Unbelievable amount of stuff. He was arguing about the bill because he didn't want to pay for half the stuff. And then he left and didn't. I wasn't waiting on the table. One of my friends was and didn't tip at all. $0.
Such a dick.
What a scumbag. Yeah, what like, a scumbag. I know it's not all of these. A lot of these guys are nice guys and they tip well. But some of them are just they feel entitled, like they should just get everything for free because they're the guy and that's it.
Well, like numerous stories of Tiger Woods being the worst tipper of all time.
Yeah, that's just
out and spend like $4,000 at a restaurant and leave like a $30 tip.
That's so ridiculous. I would chase him out of
like,
the
dude.
Of the,
you signed with Nike for like $1 billion. Yeah. Like, I think you could spare a $100 tip.
Yeah, what a scumbag.
But these guys, the excuse is always like, "Well, I'm not. Why should I tip more? I'm no different than anyone else." Well, you know what? You are different than everyone else. You need to start giving it back a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, as we were saying, we kind of got sidetracked. I feel like doesn't it feel like the baseball season kind of ended at Fenway?
Yes, on Sunday night, I felt demoralized. I felt stupid for saying some of the things I said actually after they got swept, and I was like, "Damn it! I wish we had recorded after this game because I don't feel like there's any breath left. I feel like there's nothing."
Well,
so.
A couple things have happened that we got to touch on. First, Girardi storming out of a press conference after I believe it was the second loss in Toronto. He was being asked about his bullpen use and why he used Blake Parker. And I think it was like a 3-run game at the time. And he just got totally fed up and stormed out. Not that it mattered because the Yankees were being shut out for the third consecutive game. It's obviously just frustration. But you can see like the season has totally worn on him and the team at this point.
Girardi always looks like a beaten old man at the end of the year. He always wears it all on his sleeve and he always looks very frustrated. I'm interested to see him at this point in his career and his life after a very good season and going in with high hopes.
I mean, he looks perpetually stressed out.
Yeah, oh, he's always stressed out, yes.
I guess that's the life of a baseball manager.
Yeah, he really looks stressed out, though. You look at like Bruce Bochy, he never looks stressed out. That dude's just chilling.
The Yankees currently have 79 wins, so they are still not out of the woods for having a below 500 season, which they have not done since 92. So it's been a hell of a run of 500 or better. But unless they win 3 games this week, they have 7 games left. Unless they go 3-4, they're going to finish 500 or below.
The funny thing is after this current hot streak and, you know, all the optimism towards the end of the year, we're like, yeah, we're cruising above 500. All that stuff is done. We're no longer this 500 team that we've been all year. And look where we are.
Well, I mean, the run differential on this team is still, they're still negative by, I don't know the actual number, I think.
Yeah, but it's a tale of two seasons. It's a tale of two seasons.
It's a tale of 3 seasons at this point.
Probably.
But the run, I mean, when a team has a negative run differential, they shouldn't sniff a winning record, but they are. It all depends on you. You might lose 11-0 and then win 2-1. So run differential obviously can get thrown out of whack. But usually stats in baseball, something like run differential evens out in the end. So it's kind of fitting that they're hovering back towards the mean of 81 or 82 wins. I believe I tweeted back on like September 10th. This was in the middle of the Yankees really hot streak. That they actually had the same record on like September 10th or September 12th of this year as they did last year. And that team was in first place for most of the season last year. Yeah. It's just insane to think about where this team was at one point this season. And that they even got to a point where they were playing, you know, 550 baseball or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's a testament more to the fact that there's these teams around us, I guess, are playing better. The pitching's been better than we expected, I think, in the AL East than all of us expected.
Oh, you mean, I think that's like, definitely helped out. Rick Porcello probably winning the Cy Young.
That just sounds so insane to me.
I mean, the dude was the worst pitcher in the league last year.
Yeah, I know. And then you look at the numbers. It's like, why does this shit happen to the Red Sox? Like, Jackie Bradley Jr. is the worst player ever, and then all of a sudden he's this like dominant superstar. Porcello comes out, worst pitcher ever. Now he's about to win the Cy Young. It's ridiculous.
The Red Sox go from last to first.
I'm so sick of this nonsense. Ever since they won the freaking World Series, it pisses me off.
They could legitimately have the Cy Young and the MVP.
Mookie Betts. He's up there for sure.
And if not Mookie Betts, I bet David Ortiz will get some votes.
See, that's what I never understood. That's the only thing I don't get. The MVP needs to be, they need to change it and just call it best player.
Best offensive player.
Yes, because the MVP makes no sense if you have multiple people on one team, to me. I don't know how that could be. I don't know how you could have multiple MVPs unless you actually...
The word valuable is so dumb because when A-Rod won it, he was hitting 55 home runs in Texas.
No, I know.
But his team won 72 games. It's like, right. Well, how valuable is he?
Exactly. It's ridiculous.
It's the best player award.
Yeah. That's what they need to call it.
And I think they could still have an MVP where if a guy literally carries you to the playoffs, like Gary Sanchez was doing for a little while with the Yankees. Or do you remember like when CC Sabathia pitched every 3 days for the Milwaukee Brewers?
Yeah.
Like, he should have won the MVP that year because they would have been out of the playoffs without him, and he carried them to the playoffs single-handedly. So I honestly think it could be a fun award, the most valuable player, and you could get creative with it. If a guy only plays 50 games, but those 50 games he was killing it every day and your team would have been crap without those 50 games, give him the MVP.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the fact that that they don't do it like that. Someone was just calling her a voicemail. I don't know if you heard that. someone's leaving a voicemail right now as we're talking. But I don't know why they always have to flip flop back and forth though. Because the fact of the matter is if someone is on a team that is not contending at all, I don't understand how one person is valuable. So I mean, we're singing the same thing. But yeah, they need to they have these Silver Slugger awards and offensive players like that. So I guess that's
crap about that though.
Yeah, I know. They just need to make it the offensive player more of a big deal, because I think the reason they're not doing it is because the MVP now still could be a pitcher too.
Yes, and I mean Verlander won a couple years ago.
Right.
But
it's like some years they actually use it as the valuable player.
Well, right,
and then
exactly.
Some years they'll use it as just a guy who's a stud who had a ridiculous season.
I was just going to say that. And
there's
it's stupid.
No consistency.
And they refuse to give it to a DH because, he doesn't play the field, so he can't be that valuable.
Is this the writers? Do the writers vote on that?
Yes.
Stupid. The writers are stupid.
Oh, yeah. Baseball writers are... Some of them, they just make no sense is what annoys me, is that they talk out of both sides of their mouth. And right. They're the same players that were voting for Barry Bonds for MVP 4 consecutive years won't vote for him for the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So, or the same writers, I mean. So, question for you. Did we jinx Masahiro Tanaka last week when we said that it is remarkable how healthy he's been all season?
No, I don't believe in the jinx. And I don't even think this injury is as big of a deal as I think they're just giving him time off because they know
what
the deal is. Yeah, they know what the writing's on the wall, and they're not going to mess with it. So that's what I think is happening.
What the hell is a flexor mass?
It's the mass behind the flexor on the side of the ligament.
Thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he strained it.
Yeah, I saw that, obviously. It was on the 4th home run ball.
Yeah, I was enjoying that, tweeting out just #Ace during that home run derby.
Yeah, he actually came back and pitched pretty well.
I know.
It was very ace-ish to come back from that and only give up solo shots. It was very ace-ish to give up solo home runs.
Four home runs to Tampa Bay is like giving up 20 home runs to a regular.
That's not true. Tampa Bay actually hits the ball out of the ballpark this year. They actually have a pretty good amount of home runs hit.
Again,
I have no numbers in front of me, but just talking squarely out of my ass, they hit the ball out of the ballpark.
We're really good at making assumptions without any stats behind it.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, just shut him down for the rest of the year.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Why? Like, who cares? And you know what? Shut down Dellin Betances for the rest of the year.
Let's shut down Severino while we're at it.
Well, I kind of want to see him start. He's pitching tonight.
I know.
Betances, I actually do have some stats. You ready? And I believe I said it last week, and I wanted to actually find it. I said that he has thrown the most pitches out of any reliever in baseball since 2014, and he has. He's thrown 3,960 total pitches since the start of 2014, which is more than 200 above the next guy, Carlos Torres, 3,748. So, ton of pitches.
That's a lot. I mean, that's significant just seeing that he's 200 plus above the next guy.
Yeah, like if it was 50,
that's like Scott.
20?
I have an idea. We need to look up to see how many pitches Scott Proctor threw in the most, thrown in 1 year. Because that dude got worn out. I'd be interested to see that.
Okay, we just paused so I could look up how many pitches Scott Proctor threw, and it turns out Scott was way off, and he only threw 2,800 pitches in the time he was with the Yankees. So 1,000 less than Dellin Betances, which actually makes our point even stronger in the fact that he's kind of overused.
I wasn't even guessing that he would be. I was just curious to see what the comparison was because I remember everybody. I mean, if you're a Yankees fan from when Scott Proctor was on the team, everybody knew that this dude was Torrey's guy that he brought in consistently all the time, and he was getting his arm. It seemed like his arm was about to sever.
Well, yeah, well, you know what the thing was? He probably threw more pitches in the bullpen warming up than anyone in history.
I mean, it's just, but the fact that there's that much of a difference is crazy.
So, Betances, though, I would shut him down too because let's just hit the reset button with Dellin Betances. He's had a very rough past 3 weeks. The brutal loss in Fenway, a number of other times, I mean, the loss over the weekend in Toronto. He looks gassed. We've been saying this for 2 weeks now, and this is the second consecutive season that it's happened. So next season, they need to monitor his innings earlier in the season better and monitor the number of pitches he's throwing because we can't. If Dellin Betances is going to turn into a human come September every year, well, then guess what? The Yankees are going to struggle.
Yeah, it's a big problem. There needs to be a plan for him now. Are we going to start having like the Betances rules or the Dellin rules or something like that? Because that's going to be annoying too, though.
Of course it'll be annoying. It wouldn't be a Yankees season without something annoying.
Yeah, that might be annoying. But it's true. The dude is not the same guy.
All right. So we were going to talk about free agency and some stuff that Buster Olney was reporting on this week. But I say we save it till next week and we can do an entire season wrap up and kind of preview the offseason a little bit because there's going to be so much stuff going into this offseason. And I'm actually really excited for this offseason to see what they do to improve on this team. So we'll get into that as we move into the offseason. We got a couple mailbags and then we'll wrap up the show with the unfortunate sad news of Jose Fernandez. First question, though, is a Twitter question. And it comes from @AltaMuramark. He says, what are you looking forward to the last few games now that the season is almost over?
So I guess I'm just looking for the young guys to finish on a positive note. You know, we'll see Teixeira finishes a Yankee. I mean, that'll be something we could send him off.
Yeah, the Yankees announced they're doing a little pregame ceremony before.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be cool. I'm honestly, like, I don't really care, but I want the kids to finish well, and I want the I would like to see them finish over 500.
I would like to see them finish over 500 as well. And what kind of reception do you think Mark Teixeira is going to get in that ceremony?
I think he's going to get a great reception. I think when a guy like that who really hasn't, you know, there haven't been any black marks on Mark Teixeira, right?
I mean, come on. He had a lot of time on the DL in the last four
But years. That's not something that people are going to boo about. That's not something that
no,
people are not going to be.
They won't boo, but.
Not boo, but not. I think it's going to be a very loud ovation. At that time, when it's injuries or we're talking about a guy struggling at certain areas, that stuff is forgotten in that moment. And all of that is remembered are the good times. And he's going to get a great ovation. He's going to get a standing ovation. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
And because he's a nice guy, he's always been good to the fans. You know, he's always. He's a guy that's going to get a very, very good ovation.
Also, the last 2 months of the season since he announced his retirement, he's been a backup player, and he has not bitched about it once. He's realized what he is, no longer a good baseball player, and he's just sort of taken a back seat, which is respectable. And yeah, they're just going to play highlights of the 2009 playoff run
and
everything he did. I mean, put up MVP-level numbers for the first couple years with the Yankees. So that's definitely, yeah, he'll get a cheer. He'll get cheers. I'm looking forward to Severino starting. I still think he's a starting pitcher, and I still think that they need him to be a starting pitcher if this team is going to compete for the playoffs next year. So tonight, as the podcast is airing tomorrow, we're going to know how Severino pitched. Tough Blue Jays lineup who's trying to make the playoffs. It's a big start for Severino.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's got to show the fact that he can do what he's done in the bullpen now, starting with the ball in the first inning. And it, you know, we've gone through this, you know, kind of with a fine tooth comb, with the saying that, you know, he's pitched multiple innings, so it's not like he's just going through one rotation of the batting order. I mean, he's gone through probably two the rotations to the batting order, and he's succeeded with great success. And, you know, when he first started getting into the bullpen, so the fact is that he's getting these guys out. And you know, I think the biggest thing for him, and I think you agree with me, is that third pitch. It's that, you know, he's got to get command of that changeup. He's got to be able to throw three pitches, because that third time around, for whatever reason, when he's starting, you know, he gets in trouble. And I think it's also gotten to him earlier because he's gone mental. So, yes, it's a big start. He needs to prove the fact that he can do it. He needs to prove the fact that he can do it.
I'm convinced it's a mental game and not a physical game. I mean, yes, he needs to develop the third pitch, but...
Well, I think the fact that he doesn't develop it is mental as well.
But he's proven that two pitches are good enough to get two to three, maybe even four innings out of the bullpen. So why then does he get shelled in the first and second inning of every start?
Yeah. I mean, to me, if you're a starting pitcher, though, you should have three pitches. You should definitely have one, because...
Yes. If you want to be an elite starting pitcher, you
absolutely
100% need three pitches.
You hear David Cone talking about this, and there were days where, you know, he wouldn't have control of a certain pitch, and he would have two more pitches to go to if that were the case. So the fact of the matter is that these guys are not going to have full control every single time they're out. And if you only have two pitches, you're really playing with fire at that point. You need that third pitch, and have confidence in that third pitch so that you can, you know, make adjustments and just feel what's good that day. So I still think that's a crucial part of him being successful.
Don't you agree, though, that if he's not a starting pitcher next year, I mean, that hurt. They need him to be a starting pitcher if they want to make the playoffs next year.
I mean, yeah, looking at what we have now and what's out there on the market, and, you know, unless the Yankees are making a trade for a guy that, you know, we're not even thinking of at this moment, yes, he's a guy that should be in the rotation. I mean, this is a guy that really put the Yankees in a hard spot this year because he wasn't in the rotation. We've seen what happens when your projected starters don't do what they have to do, and they're out of the rotation at that point. I mean, your team is left in disarray. So, yeah, this is a guy that has the stuff. You know, as you love the word stuff, you know, he's just got to put it together. Hopefully, he doesn't have to be he doesn't have to be like the anomaly like Evaldi was. That'll Evaldi's not going to be here, so you need a new guy to bitch about.
Yeah, but I had no problem bitching at Carl. Nathan Evaldi.
That's good.
Question from Jacob Collier. He says, would it be fair to say Girardi should get next year to play around with the new and improved Yankees, even with the way he managed this roller coaster year? Or do you believe the way he managed close games the last month was atrocious enough to get him fired? I kind of feel like we should have talked about Girardi more on last week's podcast. Somehow you and I let him off the hook for really, really poor managing in the Dodgers series at home, and then the series at Fenway against the Red Sox.
We let him off the hook a bit. We did our percentages on who was to blame, because the fact of the matter is that it didn't matter who you put out at any given time. They all sucked. It was nobody was doing their job. So when the players aren't doing their job, it makes the manager look that much worse. So, you know, I don't know. It's tough. It's really tough to get down on a guy.
But the tinkering with the bullpen, trying to get an extra out of a guy, not giving Betances a clean
inning. Yes.
I just think that he did. And then against Baltimore, too, when he put in defensive replacements in like the sixth inning of one of those games, when clearly the Yankees were going to need to score more runs. It's just frustrating some of the decisions.
When you look at Betances over, you know, even since then and how bad he's been on some of these games, you know, maybe he knew that, and he was really just trying to get out of a game without using him. You know, he's obviously seeing this guy throw every single day. He knows how he feels. He's talking to the guys, he's talking to the coaches, talking to the guys watching his bullpen sessions. So, you know, he has more information, and who's to say that there wasn't something there where, hey, this guy really does need rest. He really needs rest badly. So I don't know. I don't agree with a lot of those decisions. I mean, we've already gone through that, but the fact of the matter is that it's not all on him. I mean, you have to, at some point, put the blame on the shoulders of the players who are executing or not executing.
0% chance he gets fired this offseason.
0%. There's nobody else to take the job.
If it was negative, if I could give a negative percentage, I would.
People have to realize that when they call for Girardi's head, first of all, look at this. Look at what happened this season. Like you said, tale of two to three seasons, and they were in the hunt until last week. I mean, that's crazy. The fact that they're however 7 games over 500 for a given time. I mean, this guy has gotten a lot out of this team, and the young kids came up and responded. So, going back to Girardi managing with the Florida Marlins and the good job he did with the young kids, that's his bread and butter. That's where he is. He develops players. And apparently position players he develops very well. I mean, that's kind of has been his reputation from the get. So the fact is that these guys are coming up. He's got a young team. I think this is actually more in his wheelhouse than some of the older guys.
Yes, and I think he got into a trap with the Yankees the last few years in trying to appease veterans while still trying to win games, and it just wasn't working.
Right.
But if we go through another season and he chokes as far as bullpen management in the second half of the year again next year, then I think there's a legit case for having him fired because he really screwed up with the bullpen last September too.
You know, it's a very interesting time in the franchise because we know what's coming. It's rebuild the empire. And if you haven't gotten your t-shirt, go get it because it's a banging t-shirt. But it's the rebuild time.
Shameless plug.
They are rebuilding this team, and all of these kids, if a lot of them, I'd say the majority of them, are going to be up next year at some point during the season, whether it's to start or to end the season, they're going to be there. So if Girardi is showing that he's not able to do well with these kids next year, I think they're going to have to make a change because it'll still be early enough where the new manager, if there were a new manager, can have influence on these kids. But it needs to be relatively early. It needs to be early enough where there could be a rapport with the new guys and then build along with them. So it's next year's an important year for sure.
I feel like it's not a true baseball season if you don't absolutely hate the manager, though. Like, when has anyone ever been happy with the manager unless their team wins the World Series?
Right. There's always and he's always the guy that people bitch at.
Like unless you're literally expected to have 50 wins and you take your team to the playoffs and you can say that manager did a good job, everyone's always going to bitch about the manager. And it's always going to be that way with Girardi. I think people are always going to be pissed off at him. All right, guys, thank you for the mailbags. As I've said a few times, we are doing a wrap-up podcast next week. You know, grades, highlights, lowlights of the season. So send us your mailbag questions or takes or whatever it may be so we can read them next week. You can do that by hitting us up on Twitter at Yankees Podcast or going to BronxPinstripes.com/podcast and call the voicemail line and leave a hot take. Maybe we got a hot take while this podcast was going on. That number is 646-480-0342. So definitely we want to hear from you guys as the season is winding down.
Okay. And real quick, moving into the offseason, the voicemail box is going to be live. We need you guys to call in because we're going to make this more part of the show. We're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to figure out a good way to do this. The voicemail line, I don't know why people are scared to call this voicemail line because all it is literally a recording and you just leave a message. But some people...
People don't like the phone anymore.
I don't understand. It's ridiculous. You don't have to talk to anybody. You're talking to a freaking machine.
I don't like the phone.
But look, thank you. You're helping the cause. It's a, leave a 20 to 30 second, like, boom, quick hit, prepare it, make it good. And we'll play them on the show. I'd love to play like, five or six back to back. I think that'd be a really fun segment of the show.
I totally agree. All right. You ready to get sad?
Yes. Bad.
Horrible weekend in sports. Arnold Palmer died, which is sad, but he was very old. So like you can kind of just look back on his life and say, awesome sports icon. Fantastic. But the fact that Jose Fernandez is 24 years old, and he dies in a boating accident after everything that guy has been through to get to the major leagues. Tried to defect from Cuba 4 times. I mean, just think about, like, as a teenager. He was 15 years old when he was doing this. And he was just trying to make a better life for himself, him and his mom. Trying to get out of Cuba and, like, drowning in the water, trying to save his mother. And on these life rafts, trying to get out of Cuba, this horrible dictatorship of a country where they don't even let their... the talent of Jose Fernandez use his talent and become a better person. It's just so horrible what that guy had to go through to get to the United States, and then to have it be ripped away like that. It's just like, it's so tragic. It's unbearable to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked when I saw the news that you know, that he had passed in this boating accident, and you know, the just everything around it. I mean, such a young guy, such exuberance, such talent, you know, not just him as a baseball player, but I mean, you could, everybody, there was nobody that really had anything bad to say about this kid. I mean, it was all positive stuff. And you know, the reuniting with his grandmother, that story, and I don't know, it's devastating. It really is. It's extremely sad. And you know, I don't really, it's hard to put into words when a young guy like that is taken, you know, so fast.
Well, so part of me feels even stupid talking about it, because not only am I not a Marlins fan, but I've only watched Jose Fernandez pitch maybe 3 or 4 times in my watching days. And all I know is what I've read of him and what people have said of him. But, and like, there's always this outpouring of emotion on Twitter. And it's like from people who weren't fans of the Marlins, weren't fans of Fernandez, just doing it because they want to have an opinion out there. But what I really go to is like all the stories from people who actually knew him. And like you said, everyone has said nothing but good things.
Yeah.
The Marlins are retiring number 16 already. Everyone on the team for the Marlins tonight is wearing number 16. They'll probably wear a patch all season next year too. It's like, I don't know if you listened to Mattingly's press conference, but I mean,
yeah,
he was crying. It's just sad. And I, like I said, I kind of feel foolish because like, who am I to talk about someone like this? But
well, I mean, it's not that I think people get to a certain level when they see someone who is a popular player, a superstar, whether they've watched them pitch or not, they know who they are. They know their accolades. And the fact is, this guy was just an absolute rising, shining star and was killed in a tragic boating accident. And I think people just, it doesn't matter who that person is and, you know, what they, whether they're a singer or a baseball player, or they were just someone in the spotlight that was taken so young. That's what hits people so hard, is that there was just a person taken that young that had so much potential and showed so much to people at their young age. And I think that's where it hits everybody, because I think there are just other relatable stories that people know and cue into their brains from their own lives that make them, you know, I guess, relate to this type of thing. It's one of those things when a young guy is taken away, it's just, it's tragic. There's no other way to put it.
And, I mean, it seems foolish thinking about a baseball angle from this at this point, because obviously life is so much more important. But I mean, he was back from Tommy John surgery, looked like he was going to be a Cy Young candidate for the next 10 years. And now this sets the Marlins franchise back unbelievably. It's like, it's just tragic for those fans. Those fans who actually do exist of the Marlins. It's like, well, our favorite player was just ripped from us. It's like, it's terrible.
And it's crazy, the ultimate irony of the fact that his demise was met on a boat where he had taken four times to get over, and you know, playing for the Miami team, which is the city right there. I mean, there's
basically Cuba North. I mean,
he's a huge, guy. I don't really know what his contributions or, you know, how much he was involved with the local community, but I can only imagine he was, just because of the large Cuban contingent there. So it's just overall, it's just a sad story in general, and just taken too young. It's just, it's bad, you know, and it's, you know, we weren't going to talk about this, but I want to just bring it up quickly. I mean, so one of the guys wrote in as a mailbag about young guys, you know, going out with a lot of money and doing things like this. And there's that invincibility of young guys. I mean, I had it when I was that young, when I was in my early 20s, and it's one of those things. It's unfortunate, guys, just at that age, and I can relate only because I know I was stupid and reckless at some points.
But it doesn't sound like Fernandez, and I know the person who wrote in was sort of talking in general, but it doesn't seem
general,
like
yeah.
This was a situation where Fernandez, there was not at this point known to be any alcohol involved.
Right.
There was a speed issue in the jetty. It was dark. It was at night, so they slammed into the jetty, which they shouldn't have been going that fast, but apparently he's been out with these players with these people on this boat hundreds of times. He loves fishing.
Is that what was it? A fish? They were out fishing. Is that?
Yeah. D. Gordon said, or someone was saying, like, he would always come in after fishing and just be so excited about all the fish he caught. And like, he legit loved fishing. Like, that was one of his favorite hobbies to do. So I think that's what they were doing. And, we don't know what actually happened, but it doesn't seem like Fernandez was a guy who was somebody who was acting recklessly or doing something he shouldn't have been doing. It's just a tragic accident.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about the other guys on there. It's just, it's just unfortunate when young guys are, I mean, what, he was what, they were, that was what the deal was. It hit the jetty or going fast.
Yeah.
Crazy,
they died. Everyone probably knows this at this point, but they died, they say, on impact, not from drowning. Like, that's how fast they were going.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Crazy, man. It's just, it's unfortunate.
And Arnold Palmer died. I just want to say, like, I actually do have a story of a time I met Arnold Palmer. I was at a charity golf tournament in Rhode Island, and he was playing in it. And he hit a ball off the fairway into a group of people, and he came over. And since it was a charity tournament and he was older in age at this point, he spent 5 minutes, like, talking to a group of 15 of us, shook all of our hands, like, was very personable, very funny, took out an iron and whacked the ball out of the rough and walked up the fairway. Couldn't have been a nicer guy in the 2 minutes I got to meet him and talk to him.
Yeah, he's just one of the all-time classics. I mean, the guy was just a staple at the Masters and all the big programs, all the big tournaments, and just these guys been around for a long time. It's unfortunate that he passed. He didn't look great the last time we saw him. I think when they do that,
he hits the Masters.
The Masters ball, right shot.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's unfortunate. It's sad. The man definitely lived a full and positive life, though. That's for sure.
Definitely. Sorry, guys, to end the show on such a sad note, but when something like this happens, we got to talk about it. Anything positive you want to say before we get out of here so people aren't depressed on a Tuesday morning?
You know, let's just see what. Hopefully we can end the season and do well.
Let me say this. People are saying on Twitter, like, oh, tank the rest of the season so we get a higher draft pick. This is not football. This is not basketball. A draft pick number 13 overall to number 15 or 16 overall does not make a difference. I don't want them to tank.
Well, tell the people who said that who drafted after Mike Trout was drafted, or now Gary Sanchez. Well, he wasn't drafted.
But that's just I honestly don't think two spots is really going to make that much of a difference.
It might. You never know. But I don't want them to tank the season. I mean, that's not something that you do. No, we're in the New York Yankees. You don't tank seasons, please. Come on. Yeah, we're way better than that.
All right, guys. Good stuff, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.